Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
And good evening to everybody out there listening in. This is Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts,
Peter Leonard.
And I'm Dr. Dave DeProspero. We'd like to welcome you to our show this evening. And we have quite a bit to talk about tonight. We have some very exciting event news, and we have some interesting local news from the paranormal, and a few little debates and topics. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. In North America, call toll-free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
Well, guys, at this point, we're only 3 days away from HalbertCon up in Boonville. I hope everyone's excited.
Woohoo.
It's going to be an interesting time. I mean, I know there's a lot of stress on our end trying to bring events like this out there to the public. And, I guess Rich has talked with John Zaffis. I've seen John Zaffis actually posted on Facebook that he's excited about coming up here for 3 days.
Hey, if John Zaffis is excited about something, then...
I hope he understands that. Up here we only have two seasons, winter and July.
Yeah.
So it's going to be hot this week.
Hot.
And very humid.
It's been raining nonstop up here for the past few days with some 90-degree bursts of heat and humidity in between. So on the third floor of the Hulbert House in the middle of summer, we're looking at some hot temperatures.
Tickets have started moving again. We have, I don't know how many left, but I believe it's going to actually be in the local newspaper tomorrow's story. So
beautiful.
That in itself will actually probably sell it out. So
good.
If All you're right. out there and you want to attend, now's the time to buy one.
Remember, you could find us on Facebook, Rome Investigators of the Paranormal, if you want to buy a ticket online, or you could go to our website, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com, and we have a ticket link on the front page with all the different levels of tickets. So that's just one of many things that we're going to talk about tonight in greater detail.
Friday night will be the meet and greet with John, followed by a DJ party with Rip. Welcome in summer with a little drinking and a little dancing. Our very own Uranus Capone over there on the
spinning the
finals,
tunes.
I guess.
Uranus Capone?
The planet.
Okay.
I hope.
He
this week has been going, who knows?
He doesn't really have vinyls, does he?
No, just his pants.
Okay.
Eileen Esch, the, one of the owners of the Hulbert House, informed Pete and I when we were up there over the weekend that they are going to have some drink specials, which is kind of nice. And also they have a new chicken wing sauce that they're offering.
Oh,
they
boy.
Call it the garrote. They call it the grot. What is the proper way to pronounce
it's,
that?
It's garrote. That's the little piano wire strangler thing. But I don't believe they spell it that way.
No, it's spelled literally groat.
G-R-O-A-T.
Goat with an R.
Groat. You got to get a little groat in a troat.
Well,
what I mean?
Props to them for trying. Garrote.
Oh, but I definitely want to try them. You know, I'm an aficionado of the hot stuff.
Absolutely.
I'm always up for a crispy chicken wing with a hot sauce.
Wait a minute. What was the name of that place? Buffalo Wild? Was
oh,
that?
Yes.
Buffalo
yes.
Wild? Okay, we went to this paranormal event, and Pete and I stopped by Buffalo Wild Wings. And if any of you have ever been there, they have these, like, 30 different flavors of sauces, and there's a contest to see who could eat this.
There's only six of them.
Like, nuclear hot sauce that they have. Was it called nuclear hot sauce, I think?
It was something like that.
It was something. It was ridiculously hot. I had a speck of this hot sauce, like, on the tip of a fork. And I started choking. And Pete was putting these things away, left and right.
They're good for you.
Yeah.
I will admit, though, I'm pretty sure the nuclear wasn't the sauce. It's what they used to cook the chicken, because I've never
That's
had
right.
chicken that hot.
That's right. Pete didn't actually end up finishing the competition because the temperature of the chicken was too hot to eat. But you did actually on another trip there, order the sauce on the side for something else to dip it in. You like the sauce. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
I mean, I felt bad for our client and what happened in her bathroom that night. It was a little paranormal.
Oh, gosh. That's great.
So you're not joining me with the groat wings?
No, no groat wings for me. Thank you.
A little funky sauce or whatever the other...
You know, I'll do hot sauce in moderation, but like that one, it was a two-hour away remote location, so that just wasn't my thing.
I guess while we're on the topic, I mean, we're going to have a few vendors there. We have Kathy, who will be doing Reiki massage, so that should be interesting at the Hulbert event.
What is Reiki massage?
Well, Reiki in itself is a process of Reiki, and then they have a massage that goes with it.
It's going to be done by a Spanish guy named Ricky, but what do you call him? He says, Ricky! It's Reiki massage.
No, in the New Age movement, the Reiki is a new spiritual type of religion. I'm actually not that well read on it, so I apologize.
Okay, all right.
We do have some people selling jewelry, I believe handbags, and merchandise.
Okay.
We'll have our books out there.
Yes, we will be offering our books for sale if the walls start to bleed. And
John will have some of his stuff out
there. Right.
I'll have 5x7 headshots. And $20 a piece.
Of you?
Of me.
Great.
Yeah, of course. Who else?
Standing in front of Riverside Mall flexing.
And they do have a dartboard in the bar, so.
There you go.
Yep.
Good.
Good for target shooting, darts.
We have fans. I'm sure you'll sell them.
That's great.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Hulbert House is that third floor, there's no air conditioning up there, but Eileen has a system where she'll open so many doors to create a path of air, and then she'll turn those fans on, and she'll get that air circulating. And sometimes when we did the presentation in the air conditioning part of the Hulbert House, it was actually cooler on the third floor because maybe the temperature wasn't as cold, but there was that flow of air that kind of kept you cold. So,
in all the years we've investigated there, I don't think I ever recall the third floor being cool or cooler.
Oh, it was last year. It's kind of an interesting place. I mean, when we do the investigations there in the winter, it's such a cool place because she has the fireplaces going.
Yeah, that is nice.
And it's got that old like log cabin in the woods.
Colonial.
Kind of haunted hotel
kind
of effect to it. So,
well, you'll be able to gauge the heat based on the salt residue on my T-shirt.
That's correct.
Goes on.
Yeah, the sweat patterns on your shirt is our temperature
monitor. If anybody
had
a chance to see on Facebook the picture I posted, then you have an idea of how bad I sweat.
Oh, my God.
For those of you who weren't able to see that, Pete has a picture on Facebook of his rear side after a few hours of hot work in the yard. And there was, it was a paranormal sweat pattern, I guess you could say.
I was too ashamed to show the front side, which actually looked like a smiley face. Those two big eyes and the smile looking right at you.
Oh, good God.
And then there's going to be dinner and ghost stories with John. I mean, put on a really good buffet last year. It was roast beef, mashed potatoes, all that good stuff.
Yep.
And then you get to investigate with the godfather himself.
John Zaffis.
Yeah, but not only that this year, he's actually going to be doing a workshop as well. So not only will you get to hear him lecture about his cases, but you'll also get to learn a couple pointers from him in advanced ghost hunting techniques. So this whole event is more of a paranormal conference than just a one-night event where the goal is to get people who are involved in the paranormal educated, you know, have them learn about the Hulbert House, get to learn from, you know, Rome Investigators of Paranormal, our techniques, you know, our tech guys as well as John Zaffis, and, you know, participate in it, capture evidence, and then Sunday morning after we have our breakfast, we have another workshop, and then we'll go over do some evidence review. So people there, the attendees, can share whatever they got with us, audio clips or whatever. So on the list that we sent out to all the guests, especially the Golden Pass people who are staying there, we did ask them to bring laptops, digital audio recorders, and of course flashlight with extra batteries.
Right.
So they can help us capture evidence for themselves. So it's going to be interesting and looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
And forgive me for describing it like this, guys. I mean, we've been to several conventions throughout the years, and usually it's a lot of just sitting around, and then there's like maybe a tour that lasts an hour. I mean, you're getting 3 days immersed in this building with constant ghost hunting and activities, and lectures. And I mean, if you're really into the ghost hunting phase, I mean, this is really a great deal. I mean,
and we've been there so many times, and every time we go there, there's always something captured. Always.
It's a paranormal potluck.
Paranormal Investigator Radio, hosted by the Grown Investigators of the Paranormal. Visit us online at www.growninvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
So, you know, I like to sit up late at night and peruse the internet looking for the weirdest stuff I can possibly find.
Right.
Let me send you guys this link right here that I found about zombies. Everybody loves a good zombie.
Everybody loves a zombie.
Well, this one caught my eye because not only is there a story, there's a picture to go with it. Now, it's taking place in Indonesia. Apparently, when people die, they do something to them where they're able to get them to wake up. They walk them back to the town they were born in, and then they bury them. The picture they have alone of this one lady is amazing. It's on the island of Tanatoraja.
Can you get that email, Rich? Are you able to see this? I want to see the picture.
And it makes you wonder, what are they doing that nobody else can...
So, okay, wait, we're spinning. Holy God, what the heck?
Oh!
This is... It appears that there's an older Indonesian lady who is in some varying stage of decomposition, who is walking with the living. I mean, this lady looks like she is decomposing. You'll have to excuse the chaos. Peter just spilled a gigantic bottle of water all over several laptops and sound equipment, so I'll just keep on talking about this picture here while they deal with
electricity.
They deal with the fire. Okay, so what it says pretty much is that post-mortem, through methods unknown, the dead can be made to stand up and walk back to their town of birth. At this point, they were called Rolang, which means the corpse who stands up. Once at their town of birth, they would be directed to their coffin and would be properly buried. Freaky. Further research into the term Rolang uncovered a Tibetan connection, which is even more freaky. In this scenario, a holy man, or called a Nagaspa, gets shut in a dark room with the newly deceased and lies on top of the corpse, wrapping his arms around it and placing his mouth over the mouth of the said dead person. By breathing into the dead body's mouth, the corpse is eventually revived and leaps to its feet, attempting to escape the grasp of the holy man. The holy man must hold onto the thrashing corpse or he will be killed.
How's that for unique?
And then he has to wait for it to stick out its tongue so he can burn it off. Apparently the tongue makes a powerful magic weapon used in healing.
And you always wondered what I look at night.
Oh my goodness. The picture is truly disturbing. Do you see that, Rich?
What is the link?
It's zombieresearchsociety.com/archives/16913. And it's entitled, Are There Real Walking Dead in Tanatoraja?
Now, just to put that in perspective, I mean, I remember as a kid, maybe 5 years old, when Grandma actually picked me up and made me kiss somebody in a coffin.
Well, yeah.
I couldn't imagine laying on top of somebody, blowing on them, and then biting their tongue off. It's a bit excessive, but that's how they do it in the islands, I guess.
But, I mean, how do you even fake something like this? That's the big question here, because from what they say, they revive the body, they walk it to its town of birth, they put it in the coffin, and then they bury it.
I guess it saves on fees.
Well, I mean, you can't even hoax something like that, because in the end, someone ends up getting buried, and unless it's some elaborate process where they're taken out afterward, but this picture, if anybody's watching or listening to us, zombieresearchsociety.com/archives/16913. Check that out.
I mean, I've heard in Haiti they have the zombie cucumber where it actually has the effects of making people zombastic, if that's a word.
Zombastic. Wasn't that a rap song, Mr. Zombastic?
He is fantastic. Where it does mimic, like, it turns people into mindless, pretty much slaves. They're not dead, but it's sort of like a drug.
A zombie cucumber, it's called?
Yeah.
Rich, look that one up.
But this one's just disturbing with the tongue biting and the...
Yeah, that's weird. That's definitely a weird one. Of all the things that we've looked at, I think that's perhaps one of the most unusual that I've seen so far.
The whole zombie thing does hold some fascination for me. However, I don't really give it much credibility. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, it's paranormal, but I haven't seen any other... I mean, I'm looking at this right now. The photo is just... it's just weird. I don't know if that's a woman with a mask and a bad hairdo, or it actually is a dead corpse.
I will probably have a nightmare from looking at this picture.
You would think if this is so real that this happens that the media would jump on this. I mean, come on, the dead finally walk?
How do they get it back walking again? That's what I want to know.
You need to sit down on a Sunday night, turn on AMC, and watch Walking Dead to catch up on this stuff.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, but what do they do with the tongue after he bites it off? Just make an amulet out of it?
It's a very powerful, magical object, it said.
Sorry for that clicking. I'm trying to go to the website of zombie cucumbers. Here we go. The best way to create a zombie is using the serum of an incredibly rare cucumber from Haiti. A cucumber milkshake is poured down the throat.
What the heck?
Isn't that called tzatziki dip or something? Oh, Lord. Some of the things out there... I understand the fascination with zombies.
Right.
I mean, especially the parties. People get a chance to dress up and just go all out there and have fun. I mean...
And, I mean, when we're talking about zombies, we really have to bring up the whole bath salts epidemic, because that's about as close to a zombie-like condition as you're going to get while still living.
I don't even know what that was all about. I mean,
the bath salts or the cucumber?
Is it something you put in the bath, or is it...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, that whole thing died out pretty quick.
Fortunately, I mean, or unfortunately, it started in our hometown, became one of the major distribution centers for that stuff.
It did, yeah. Yeah, we had some issues around central New York with the bath salts.
You know, a few people got their faces bitten off and a few other things.
Yeah. And that's not a joke either. That's right. Weird.
I got to pose this as a serious question. When people go crazy, why do they always do what they do naked? I mean, you know, it's bad enough you bite somebody's face off, but you're running around naked.
Because I guess the drug actually heats you up inside. It fries your brain. And the first thing you do is just start to shed your clothing because you feel like you're, you know, hot and sweating.
But with everything, though, it seems like people, the first thing to go after the person's mind is their clothes.
They take a busload of kids hostage, they're naked. I mean, it's just that. Maybe we should start studying that.
Whatever you want, Pete.
I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Yeah. If there's any lawyers out there, no, I'm kidding. Okay, we have the laptop turning around. Oh, look at this picture. Spaced out UFO fan sparks internet frenzy over frozen alien. That one doesn't even look real.
It looks like a horrible cake with a bad frosting.
It really does look like a cake. All right, this is actually on Fox News.
So you know it has to be almost true.
Right. A Chinese man has posted photographs of him posing next to an alien, which he claims to have trapped after it crash-landed. A rather crude-looking extraterrestrial sparked a frenzy of speculation.
Well, what would a proper alien look like? Do we know?
I don't know. He said it. He insisted he took the bizarre-looking creature back to be stored in a freezer at his home after the crash landing in March, and it is now almost July.
But you see, there's my point again. Even the aliens are always naked when they're found. I mean, well, they fly through space naked?
Maybe we're the only society that has clothing. I don't know. Police issued a statement saying the rather unconvincing figure at the bottom of a chest freezer was, in fact, not another life form, but high-quality rubber. The alien purported electrocuted and discovered by a man in Binzhao is high-quality imitation, the Jinan police posted on their Sina microblog. The body is made up of high-quality rubber. All right, so we know now that there are still hoaxes going on about aliens. And, oh, you know what? That brings up a question, you guys can help me with this. I was reading something today on the internet looking for something to talk about tonight, and I came across an article where this mass sighting of a paranormal nature, they saw this figure, a glowing figure, walking across a field, and when they brought in environmental scientists were brought into the location, and they chalked it up to swamp gas, ignited swamp gas, and this happened many times, and many people saw this. And as soon as I thought of swamp gas, what do we always think of with swamp gas? UFOs. There's always some kind of connection between UFO sightings and swamp gas. So, one of you guys, can you find out what the connection is to swamp gas and UFOs or swamp gas and the paranormal?
I think that goes back to Dr. Hynek there when they were doing the original Blue Book and all of that. That was one of the catch-all phrases they used to debunk.
It had to be swamp gas.
The science behind it, the moon reflecting off of swamp gas, that's, I don't know. Years and years ago, I came across the picture of a UFO, of an alien that the Vatican supposedly holds.
The Vatican?
Where the head is all elongated and so on. And you're reading this very scholarly article till you get almost halfway through, and then they say, well, it was deformed from swamp gas. And it's like, even the Vatican.
Swamp gas.
I mean, I know I've had swamp gas. It's kind of frightening. But,
after those nuclear wings.
Paranormal Investigator Radio, hosted by the grown investigators of the paranormal. Visit us online at www.growninvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
So what else do we have, guys?
Okay. Well, I've been doing some searching here online, and I come up with some interesting things for us to talk about here. First off, let's talk about the top 10 paranormal hoaxes. You guys on board with this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's start with number 10. Okay, now these are actual hoaxes, and they're pretty well known, to be quite honest with you. So after doing some research and stuff like that, they've actually dismissed it. And the first one that kind of surprises me, which is number 10, is King Tut's curse. When the Egyptian pharaoh Tutankhamun tomb was discovered early in the 20th century, a curse was found inscribed over the entrance: death shall come on swift wings to him who disturbs the peace of the king. Before long, stories were told about unnatural deaths of workers on the site. King Tut's curse eventually found its way into popular culture and set the stage for a whole subgenre of horror stories and movies, like The Mummy, so on. In 1980, the security officer for the original excavation site admitted that stories had been circulated to scare away thieves. Historical records show that most evacuation workers went on to lead long and healthy lives. So much for the King Tut curse.
There are some cases, though, where people have broken open those tombs and have been barraged by, you know, old bacteria and all sorts of issues.
Well, that's actually, you know, either a living organism or highly allergic to a dead organism.
Nothing to do with the curse.
No, it's got nothing to do with a curse that was inscribed and placed on it.
And what was his name? Carter? Lord Carter, the one who found the tomb? I'm not sure of the last name, but they're pretty sure he became septic after he shaved. That's what led to his death after opening the tomb. Some type of mold in the air got into an open cot.
Did you know that the TV series Downton Abbey? Anybody ever watch Downton Abbey?
Never heard of it.
PBS.
The actual castle, Carnarvon Castle. Highclere. No, was it?
Carnarvon sounds
right. Okay, well,
it may have not been Carter, yes.
He was the guy that discovered King Tut. That was his actual real-life residence in England. That's where he became famous.
Hmm, interesting.
Anyway.
Okay, well, moving on with the curses, or excuse me, with the hoaxes. Number 9 is the Conningly Fairies. Have you guys ever heard of this?
I'll refrain from comment.
Okay, based on that, I take it now. But in 1917 and 1920, a young English cousins, Elise Wright and Francis Griffith, produced a series of photographs depicting themselves interacting with fairies. In modern times, it is hard to imagine how anyone could be fooled by these obvious fakes, but in the early 20th century, they were convincing enough to attract a huge following and dupe such notables as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It wasn't until actually 1981 that Wright and Griffith admitted the hoax, although they continued to claim they had indeed seen fairies, and then one of the photos was genuine.
Isn't that the basis of True Blood? You have a few fairies running around with vampires
and,
in Louisiana?
And shifters.
That's right.
And werewolves.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, I watched that this morning on HBO On Demand, so yes.
They got it all in Louisiana.
Louisiana is a hotbed for supernatural creatures. Okay, number 8 is the Cardiff Giant.
Oh, close to home.
Close to home. There you go. In Cardiff, New York. 1869, workers digging a well in Cardiff, New York, uncovered what appeared to be the petrified remains of a giant, which is 3 meters, which is about 10-foot man. Archaeologists declared the body to be fake, but the public reaction was more accepting, easily among those who considered it evidence in support of biblical history. The body became a business asset as crowds paid to see a glimpse. Showman P.T. Barnum tried to acquire the body, but eventually made his own replica, causing additional controversy over which was the genuine giant. December 1869, tobaccoist George Hull confessed to the hoax. The body was sculpted from concrete and buried a year prior to the well digging.
Jeez.
So there you go. So it's hard. You can imagine when even with us in the paranormal, we try to provide evidence to people. The first thing that people put in their head is it's got to be hoax.
Yep.
It's got to be fake. And then you read articles like this, and then you kind of know why
mm-hmm.
people take this and are so skeptical of the paranormal. Number 7 is a gentleman named Uri Geller and his spoon bending. During the 1970s, Uri Geller enjoyed huge success with his mentalism acts, based largely on his alleged ability to bend spoons with his mind. Now, this hits close to home for me, as I actually represent some mentalists that actually do this, too, as well. But despite the fact that he was doing this with his mind, it turned out to be a hoax. So you can actually still see spoon benders as well at college universities and theaters and stuff like that. So number four pushes us towards the paranormal, and that's the Amityville Horror. Now, many of you guys know this story. In 1974, Ronald Defoe Jr. shot and killed 6 members of his family in Amityville, New York. A year later, the Lutz family moved in, only to move out 28 days later, claiming that they had been terrorized by ghostly presence. Their story became a best-selling book by Jay Anderson, the basis of a series of films. The franchise has been highly successful, banking on the claim of being a true verbal story. For some of you who didn't hear me right there in the middle of that paragraph,
we had a short out with all the water.
My goodness, Pete
struck again. So finishing off with the Amityville Horror, on closer investigation, however, it seems that not much of the story can be verified. Police and other records contradict the book's account, and many holes have been found in the story in 1979. I know the Warrens actually investigated that, and I think John Zaffis actually had an opportunity to visit the Amityville House, too, as well. And of course, I mean, the true story, which I've actually read in a book, quote-unquote, if it is true, compared to what Hollywood's shown me in like 3 or 4 different remakes, it's totally different. So
I haven't seen the remake. I know there was one out there a few years ago.
Oh, you got to see it with Ryan Reynolds.
Yes,
oh, yeah. It's the Green Lantern.
That was a good remake of it. It had no basis in reality, but it was actually a good movie.
Actually, I like the one with Margot Kidder that went back into the 80s where James Brolin and Margot Kidder. So number 5 is the Project Alpha. If you're not familiar with this, Project Alpha is the only hoax in this list that have been perpetrated as a means to debunk the paranormal investigated by skeptic James Randi. The plan involved planting 2 fakes by the name of Steve Shaw and Michael Edwards into a paranormal research project. Shaw and Edwards used simple conjuring tricks to convince university researchers and much of the general public they had supernatural powers. The fallout from their eventual confession cost many people their professional reputations, and the lab responsible for the research was shut down. Number 4, the Loch Ness Monster. And this is the surgeon's photo. This is probably one of the most promising photos that came out regarding Nessie and the Loch Ness.
Please tell me that's not a hoax.
Oh, it's a hoax.
Come on.
A hoax.
It can't be.
Well, there have been so many different hoaxes associated with the Loch Ness Monster, but none more enduring than the surgeon's photo, which was submitted to the London Daily Mail by Dr. R. Kenneth Wilson in 1934. The hoax is believed to have been orchestrated by photographer Marmaduke Wetherall, who had previously been humiliated after taking photos of fake monster footprints. Number three is the Shroud of Turin. Scientific examinations indicate that the image was made from tempera paint sometime between 1260 and 1390 AD.
I don't believe it.
Well,
I'm going to have to dispute that one, because radio dating does put some of the pollen in that back into the time of Christ.
Okay. Well, again,
who do I know? I'm just...
up for dispute. Number two is the 100th Monkey. You guys know what this is about?
Never heard of it.
Okay.
It was a movie, right?
No. No. I'll just jump to number one here. I won't even go down. I'll let people go to paranormalencyclopedia.com is the website /directory/top/hoaxes, and you can go through these and get a paragraph on each one. And the number one biggest hoax, according to this, is the Fox Sisters.
Who are they?
That's Lilydale.
That's a Lilydale.
Oh.
Yeah, according to this. Now, I go to Lilydale every year and have for about 5 years now, and I find the place fascinating. The people are so nice and kind. The Spiritless organization there is, they're great people to deal with. And
they have good hot dogs.
And they have great hot dogs.
Good hot dogs.
So, although not well known today, the Fox Sisters are responsible for one of the most influential hoaxes of all time. Even though more than 150 years since the original events, the effects can still be seen in the spiritual beliefs of millions of people. So anyways, you can read a little bit more about this, again, at paranormal-encyclopedia.com/directory/top/hoaxes, and there are the top 10 that they've listed. So,
and it's interesting,
check it out.
You mentioned James Randi there. I think his challenge is still valid out there, where he's paying $1 million for someone who can provide authentic proof of paranormal activity.
Still?
Take him up on the offer.
Huh.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond.
Paranormal Investigator Radio.
With your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nikodem, and Dr. David DeGrasso.
Did you get a chance to pull up the Vatican webpage there, David?
I do not, no. But I did see that. It's a very unusual. It kind of looks like it has fangs.
I'm just going to give you the final quote that's in the article.
Go ahead.
A U.S. envoy described the skull as follows. Everyone just needs to calm down about the matter. The Vatican was once swampland. You're looking at the effects of swamp gas.
That's...
So I guess it is an American thing.
Boy. But yeah, if you do have a chance to look at the skull, I mean, it's not your quintessential alien skull, but it does certainly have an elongated shape, and the eye sockets are the the traditional oval shape. It's very weird.
Very freaky.
That swamp gas, boy.
Hey, there's a website out there called theanomalist.com, A-N-O-M-A-L-I-S. I'm searching for Bigfoot.
What the heck?
The next show on TV.
I hope I'm not giving people ideas of what to do. So we got another one here. Roll with it. Ghost in toilet unravels factory workers. Okay.
Can you wait? Imagine that. That's a close encounter if there ever was
one. I know.
One.
I know.
I'll tell you. Every time you go in the bathroom, crap happens.
Yeah. And I think the best one here is I just found it here. Hold on 1 second. Goblin allegedly burns owner's privates. So now we've got goblins burning genitalia. So, yeah, this is good stuff.
Somebody had to do it. Theanomalist.com.
Yes, theanomalist.com. And I'm sorry, folks, but you're going to have to read this for yourself, but there's some really cool stuff on here. Again, I mean, skeptic or what, read it. It's good stuff. There's a certain entertainment value to some of this paranormal stuff. I mean, if you watch the shows like Ghost Hunters and, you know, Haunted Collector,
Don't touch that.
You'll know, essentially, that there is an entertainment value with it all. So, but the biggest thing, the biggest challenge I think we have as paranormal investigators is the fact that there's so many skeptics out there. And I don't know about you guys, but when I came aboard, I was a skeptic. I mean, I heard all these great stories about people levitating and exorcisms and people seeing apparitions and all this kind of stuff. And I've never experienced any of that stuff in my entire life. So by joining the group, I've actually been able to arrest some of those skeptics' ideas I had and actually saw some really cool and interesting things that I can't dismiss.
You know, I've seen stuff that would send people over the edge, but...
And that's just me.
I'm still a skeptic, though, about stuff. Unless you actually see it or hear it, or you could document it or analyze it.
But there's actually websites out there dedicated to destroying groups out there just to debunk their evidence. It's like, I don't even know if they investigate themselves. But
that's true.
They're the first ones to criticize everything.
And yeah.
Everything has an explanation. Even my sweating.
There's no explanation for that, Pete. All right, now, I had a question or a topic that I wanted to put out there quickly with regard to technology. And I was actually watching a few episodes of Ghost Hunters on Demand the other day. And I noticed that they're all using full-spectrum cameras now. And we've been talking about this for some time within the group, the difference between full-spectrum cameras, IR cameras, visible light cameras. What do you guys think? Do you have any thoughts about...
I do like the full-spectrum pictures that come out. They're very nice. They're purple.
Well, that brings up a point, because when you're looking for full-spectrum cameras, most often online, you're going to see those purple pictures. And that's achieved by a filter. The actual full spectrum, the real conversions, they're going to look a little bit more like your standard color video, but because of how they process it, there's a little bit of infrared sensitivity as well as ultraviolet sensitivity, and the thought is there, if you can't see it with your naked eye, you're not going to be seeing it in the visible spectrum. Usually, where do we catch stuff? What's the most, you know, the most commonly used type of camera that we have?
The Kodak disc camera.
The infrared, the night vision, right. The, what? The Kodak disc camera?
The 110 cartridge.
No. Okay, no, we're not talking about that one. The Sony Handycams are the ones that we use, and they all have the night shot, the infrared, and Pete did actually purchase a UV-modified camera.
It was a hack shack.
Yeah, that was a little hack job, And it was cool, though, because you could see stuff in the different spectrums that you can't see in the opposing spectrums. You could pick something up in the UV realm that you can't see in the IR realm or the visible light realm and vice versa. So these full-spectrum cameras that they have out now, you know, they're fantastic. But the one thing that people have to realize when using a full-spectrum camera is that you need a full-spectrum illuminator. You don't just, you know, emit UV light or radio. Well, Pete does sometimes. Depends on how.
Wouldn't that be white light?
White light? Well,
because it has
white light
spectrum.
Does give off a little bit of UV, a little bit of IR, but not enough to...
Not enough for a GBIF in there.
No, not enough to make the camera react. So a lot of these companies, and I'm going to say Phantom Light out there because they're one of the most popular ones, they have the full spectrum camera... they have cameras, but they have the full spectrum illuminators that have the UV LEDs, the IR LEDs, and they also have some green and red ones to satisfy the visible light ones. Now, why green and red LEDs? Because bright white will obviously screw with your night vision, and it will illuminate a scene unnecessarily, where the green and the red will be a little bit more unobtrusive to the naked eye. So, as you're watching these TV shows out there, be aware of what types of cameras they're using, especially if you guys have your own paranormal investigation groups. There is a large movement going toward full-spectrum cameras, away from just infrared cameras. They're noticing that a lot more evidence is caught between spectrums rather than just in one spectrum.
Now, were you watching the domestic one or the international?
No, the domestic one.
Because I believe Barry used that a couple seasons...
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think as I'm talking. It was someplace in England where he was using it, and I believe it was like a mist that they captured on a full spectrum camera.
Yep. Full spectrum cameras are notorious for catching these.
And they're right up there with thermal cameras, aren't they? I mean, they're in the
They're not that expensive.
Lower 1,000 range.
You could get a really good one for about $400-$600, and they're specially made. And there's actually a company out there that only specializes in full spectrum cameras for the paranormal, above and beyond what Phantom Light sells. But they all have motion detection built into them. They all have a whole assortment of on-screen display options. So it's much more than just a little camera that you hook up to the DVR system. It's a full system within itself. And the evidence that you record with them is often a lot better than what you could get with just an IR camera, or especially with just a visible light camera.
Give them a little shout-out, too. Even I've been seeing on television the ladies from Spectre Detector. They've been infiltrating a lot of the
That's right.
major shows now with their piece of equipment.
Yeah, that piece of equipment interfaces with a DSLR still camera, and when it detects an assortment of fields, whether it's EM fields or temperature fluctuations or what have you, it fires the camera. So they've actually become known.
It's on the wish list.
The Spectre Detector or Spectral Detector.
All paranormal investigators have a nice wish list of things they want to get.
Seriously. What's on your wish list, Rich?
I would like a full-spectrum camera for myself. I've actually went online, looked at eBay and some of the Ghost Hunter stores online for them. And the one I see a lot is a Fuji that's out there.
Oh, the modified ones?
Yeah. And the other thing was interesting that I found out is that, and I think you pointed this out to me, Dave, is that you can buy a full-spectrum camera, but you still need the full-spectrum light to go with it.
Got
to
have the illuminator.
Yeah, if you don't have the illuminator... I mean, what essentially will the camera do without the illuminator?
It'll be just like a regular visible light camera, which is shooting in no light. It won't pick anything up. Nothing. It'll just be a dark scene. It may get minimal picture in there, but like with the IR cameras, if you don't have the little IR lights on them, mm-hmm. then it's just a dark scene. Same thing with just the UV cameras. If you don't have the UV lights, then it's just a dark scene. So the full spectrum needs all of the spectrums illuminated in order to give you that full picture from all of the spectrums.
Can people modify regular digital cameras and make them to full spectrum cameras?
Some they can. There's certain models that have filters built in that eliminate the UV, like a UVA, UVB filter. Some cameras have an IR filter built in. The thing is that depending on the camera manufacturer, some of them are films that are applied on the lenses themselves, and you would have to somehow scrape the film off of the lens, and to do that without...
Sure, that's good for the lens.
Yeah, without damaging the lens, that's going to be impossible. But there are certain manufacturers that have a stack of lenses, and a stack of filters in front of the lens, and if you remove the stack, then the sensor behind the lens is sensitive enough to pick up all the spectrums.
Okay, so I'll just buy one.
Yeah, it's really not something you'd want to do yourself if you
don't
have...
I'm not going to take my $1,000 Canon camera and with some sandpaper jar to start sanding down the lens.
Unless you know how to do it, you really don't want to play with it yourself.
No, that's okay. No, I'll just basically buy one. It's actually... I mean, there's a few pieces of equipment that I would like to get on my wish list. A full-spectrum camera. I'd also like to get a REM pod. I mean, we use the K2s a lot,
mm-hmm.
but what's interesting in REM pod is basically... you can set it off in the corner and use it almost like a motion detector. If something comes near it, it'll trigger it.
But the REM pod measures a totally different field than the K2. The REM pod measures positive and negative static charges. The K2 measures electromagnetic fields. So it's still valid, and it's advised to use both of them together, because if you're detecting a static field and the K2 goes off, then you know there's some correlation between... whether it's positive or negative static and EMF. So that's definitely a popular device that's out there, built into a lot of products now.
The third thing I would really like to get is like an EMF pump or an ion generator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something like that, because when we do investigations sometimes, when we feel that something's manifesting, and we can feel the energy around us, and other investigators can feel it, or you can feel it very faintly, I'm wondering sometimes if you give that ghost, spirit, whatever you want to call it, give it a little bit of a boost.
Mm-hmm.
Create enough ionization or enough EMF or whatever in the room to give it that little extra it needs to try to do something. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. For those people out there that don't really have a budget but want an EM pump, all you really need is a motor, any kind of motor, DC motor, AC motor. If you have a motor of any kind and you plug it in, that motor gives off a diabolical EMF field. For anybody who has a ceiling fan, turn your ceiling fan on and put your K2 meter up to it or your digital EMF meter. It'll be off the charts. So any type of motor will give you the same thing, the same effect as what an EMF pump will do. So that's the poor man's EMF pump.
So what does it actually pump?
Just EMF. It just creates its own field.
So the motor actually just creates the field.
Yeah.
They make it sound like the motor is creating something and it's pumping something.
It's the motor that creates its own EMF.
I should bring you the fan I have on my desk at work. I put the EMF meter near it and it maxed it out.
Yeah, if you're ever on an investigation, anything that has a moving motor, you could set that up and you'll have your own EMF pump. Likewise, the ion generator, that's a little bit more difficult. Those are sold as kits, and you could either buy the kit unassembled through a place like Ramsey Electronics, or you could buy a pre-assembled one. Unassembled, they're about $69. Assembled, I've seen them up to like $250, $300, and it really doesn't take a rocket scientist to put those little kits together. About 20 minutes, and you'll have an ion generator. But with the ion generator kit, you got to watch out because that's something that plugs into an AC outlet. So anytime you're working with bare wires and AC, please beware.
Good to know.
I actually did just purchase an item on my wish list.
You did? What'd you get?
You remember that random conversation I sent you? I'm like, can you get me germanium?
Did you get a microphone?
No, I found an actual device that they're selling out there. Plug into your Frank's box called a Raudive Geranium Diode Receiver.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Wasn't that expensive? I mean, it came in at about $70. I mean, but as we know, our friend Tesla did a lot of work with germanium.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see if it actually improves the reception on the Frank's box.
Well, what exactly is it that you purchased? Is it just the diode? Because the diodes are pretty rare. But
is it supposed to increase the sensitivity?
Oh, wait, he's turning it
up.
Oh, okay, I see. This is a...
I'm sure it's just the fancy housing around a Radio Shack.
$4 piece of electronic. Okay, so it's a little box that has like a headphone jack coming out of it, and you're supposed to plug this into...
the Frank's box.
You plug this into the Frank's box, and it's supposed to do something. It's a receiver.
Ghosts talk to it. Come on, David.
Must be very sensitive... microphone, or maybe pick up low frequencies or very low hints of noise. I mean, I'm trying to envision what that thing actually does when you plug it into the Frank's box.
Yeah, me too.
It's like a rectangle with some logos on it with a jack on the other end.
Well, Tesla did a lot of work with sound, and a lot of his sound generating stuff and frequencies and vibrations all revolved around using germanium, which isn't really that rare of an element. It's just something that's not common.
Well, it seems to be pricey.
But there are people out there who have used germanium crystals, and they've put them up against an object, and they put two wires against the crystal, and they plug those wires into like the microphone port of your digital audio recorder, and they say that you're supposed to be able to pick up things through the crystal that's being given off by the object that it's placed against. So we'll have to see how this thing works. I don't know. That's interesting.
Is this sort of like the stone tape?
The stone tape theory type thing. Who knows? Well, that's exciting. That's cool.
Oh, you know me and my little toys.
Gotta have them. So, I guess it would probably be worthwhile to spend at least a minute or two just wrapping up with this Hulbert House event, just in case anybody needs any more information, because it is this weekend. It's the last time we're going to be talking about the Hulbert House event tonight.
This is it, folks. You're going to hear no more about the Hulbert House from us after this weekend.
Just about how good it was and what you missed.
Yeah, exactly. Everything that you missed. The Hobart House is located in Boonville, New York. And though it sounds like it is out in the boondogs, it actually is. However,
it seriously is.
However, you'd be surprised. There is a Burger King around the area. There's a Subway, a Rite Aid drugstore. So there's some modern facilities there as well, supermarket and stuff. But it's a great old place, and we'll be there all weekend with John Zaffis. Workshops, lectures, investigations, tours, meals. I mean, this is a paranormal investigator's weekend retreat.
It's not that old. They do have enough bathrooms in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have air conditioners in the rooms, too. You can still get a room there. I believe most of the hotel rooms that have bathrooms in them are been rented out. There are a few rooms that have a bathroom that's shared. Remember, folks, this is built back in, the 1800s.
We can give you a coffee can if you need it.
Yes. Coffee cans are available. You charge. And come by. We have drink specials, too, as well, because us paranormal investigators do get thirsty as well. And we'll have merchandise for sale, and we'll have the RIP gear out for display, our thermal imaging cameras and, IRs, and we'll have our DVR system hook up to take a look at the different floors during investigation.
16 cameras.
16. What's actually nice about this year is last year we did an investigation with over 125 people, and we pulled it off quite nicely and quite organized, believe it or not. But this year we're going to cap it at 65. So we're going to cut it right down in half. So we'll have 65 total, if we get that number, that will be actually doing the investigation. General mission people, we turned away almost 78 people the night of the event last year. So hopefully we'll get them to come back this year. Now, it is limited seating, just to let you know, 125, and that's it, folks. So make sure you get there, and we do have preferred seating. If you still want to get a VIP ticket, you can get a VIP seat up towards the front as well. So hope to see you there.
And unlike other VIPs, when you're a RIP VIP, we take care of you. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on for you.
Yeah, three full days of events.
And RIP VIP?
It's not just a wristband. It's a lifestyle.
If anybody wants any more information, visit our website, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com. View us on Facebook, Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. And for Paranormal Investigator Radio, you could check out our website at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com.
And we just set up a Facebook page for it, too, if you'd like to go out there and like it so we know who's listening.
Beautiful. Please check out Paranormal Investigator Radio on Facebook. Send us a like.
Oh, nice. And we've got almost 3,000 followers on our fan page.
Good. Good. We're getting there.
Must have been the picture of these. Sweating.
It was the sweat. Oh, God.
Jumped up about 200 people after that picture went up.
On that note, for Paranormal Investigator Radio,
I'm Peter Leonard.
I'm Rich Nicodem.
And I'm Dr. Dave DiProspero. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week, or 2 weeks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.
Still listening.